Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 18th, 2021. Coming up this hour.
The White House makes Juneteenth the first new federal holiday in nearly four decades.
Agencies and firms scramble to adjust to the holiday's abrupt arrival.
On Capitol Hill, talks on infrastructure take another step forward.
And fresh off his European trip, President Biden turns his attention to China.
Ridership on New York City subways is picking up. Plus, North Korea's Kim Jong-un says he's ready for both dialogue and confrontation with the U.S. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. The Nets lost in Milwaukee. There'll be a game seven tomorrow. The Islanders lost their playoff game. The Yankees won. The Mets lost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good Friday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
I'm Amy Morris. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by SEI. Challenges highlight one's character, partnership, and resilience. At SEI, they act as one community with their clients. Go to seic.com/banks.
And U.S. futures are holding steady as we head into the final trading day of the week. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are little change to the downside. Dow futures are down 6. NASDAQ futures up 26 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 7/32nds, yield 1.47%, yield on the 2-year 0.20%. NYMEX crude down 0.5%, down 41 cents at $70.63 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.9% at $17.91 even an ounce. Amy?
Nathan, we start today by talking about tomorrow. For the first time in nearly four decades, we have a new federal holiday. The move to observe Juneteenth, commemorating the end of slavery, was signed into law late yesterday by President Biden.
This is a day of profound, in my view, profound weight and profound power. A day in which we remember the moral stain, the terrible toll that slavery took on the country and continues to take.
The bill to make June 19th a holiday pretty much sailed through Congress, giving rare bipartisan support. Now the president's hoping that leads to more cooperation.
We showed the nation that we can come together as Democrats and Republicans to commemorate this day with an overwhelming bipartisan support of the Congress. I hope this is the beginning of a change in the way we deal with one another.
Now, Juneteenth comes tomorrow on a Saturday, which left firms and agencies across the country scrambling to decide whether to give workers the day off today.
The response has been far from uniform from Wall Street to Washington in both the public and private sectors. We get details from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Most government workers will be granted paid time off today as the holiday falls on a Saturday this year, but the same won't be true for the financial markets. Before deciding whether to close, American exchanges, primarily the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, rely on input from several participants, including banks, broker-dealers, and regulators. And the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association and Industry Trade Group says it will not recommend that fixed income markets close as the FedWire settlement system will remain open in New York. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right. Thank you, Charlie. The Federal Reserve decided to close its Washington offices today in observance of the holiday. The Securities and Exchange Commission will do the same. Most federal agencies are closing, but courts will be left to make the decision on their own. With markets open, most banks are not giving staff the day off, though some are offering a floating holiday to take later this year.
Well, speaking of banks, we're getting more on Bank of America's plans to return workers to the office. CEO Brian Moynihan tells us all vaccinated employees should be back at their desks come September.
As more people get vaccinated, we keep bringing more back. We got a lot of work to get those back. But the view is after Labor Day, our view is all the vaccinated teammates will be back and will be able to operate fairly normally. And we'll then start to make provisions for the other teammates as we move through the fall.
Brian Moynihan spoke with Bloomberg's David Westin. The CEO says more than 70,000 employees have voluntarily disclosed their vaccine status to Bank of America.
Back on Capitol Hill, it is another small step forward in the push for a bipartisan infrastructure bill. A consensus appears to be forming around some kind of deal. Ann Cates has more from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
21 senators, including 11 Republicans, have signed onto a bipartisan infrastructure framework for a $579 billion package. Such legislation would still need support from nearly all 50 Democrats in the chamber, unless more Republicans sign on. And it includes a funding mechanism indexing the national gasoline tax to inflation that the White House has opposed. One member of the negotiating group, Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner, warns that lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are imposing preconditions, and getting an overall deal could be what he calls a challenge. In Washington, Ann Cates, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ann, thanks. Now that he's back in D.C., infrastructure will surely be top of mind for President Biden. But with his European trip now in the books, he's also turning his focus to China. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the details.
Mr. Biden spent his Europe days building relationships with G7, NATO, EU Commission, and then his meeting with Vladimir Putin. Now, China was a topic of discussion in each of those forums. Mr. Biden has characterized China as U.S. number one adversary. So now his NSA chief, Jake Sullivan, says the president is ready. Chinese officials say dialogue between the two countries has been ongoing, but now the Biden administration wants a one-on-one. Timing, a major question. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Ed. China's also part of our corporate news roundup this morning. Microsoft planning a massive expansion in the country. Sources tell us it's looking to add 4 new data centers in China by early next year, part of a wider effort by Microsoft to expand across Asia. The company already has 6 data centers in the country.
On the earnings front, we have results from Adobe this morning. The company beat estimates with a 23% jump in revenue and gave a profit forecast ahead of expectations. That says more customers sign up for subscriptions to Adobe's digital marketing and customer analysis software.
And coming up for this final trading day of the week, quadruple witching day, the time when a pile of equities, futures, and options contracts expire. The process tends to result in some volatility for stocks near the end of the day as traders buy and sell to square up their positions.
And a programming note, tune in next hour for a special and rare interview. It is a Bloomberg News exclusive with the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, speaks with Bloomberg's Eric Schatzker. That's coming up at 6:15 Wall Street time. S&P futures down a point, Dow futures down 8, NASDAQ futures up 24. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. New York City's subway system reached a record 2.5 million customers on Wednesday. The MTA says that's about 44% of pre-pandemic era ridership and the highest level since the COVID-19 outbreak. While the 2.5 million customers is below the pre-pandemic weekday average of 5.5 million, subway ridership has been increasing as New York City fully reopens. More businesses are asking employees to work from their offices, and cultural and entertainment venues are loosening restrictions. A bipartisan group of senators is pushing cybersecurity legislation following attacks on critical U.S. infrastructure. The lawmakers want consequences for countries that host cyber criminal networks, countries like Russia, Iran, and North Korea. Cyber attacks recently forced the temporary shutdown of a major energy pipeline and multiple large U.S. beef plants. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
I find it impossible to believe that these Russian-speaking terrorists, cyber terrorists, operating in the sphere of influence of Russia, that the Russians don't know about it and they're not in on it.
Graham also says they want to provide incentives for businesses who follow best practices in preventing hacks. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says he's ready for both dialogue and confrontation, offering an opening for talks. The comments are the first high-level suggestion of talks since President Biden replaced Donald Trump. Israel launched airstrikes on the Gaza Strip for a second time since a shaky ceasefire ended last month's 11-day war. The strikes came as activists mobilized by Gaza's Hamas launched incendiary balloons into Israel for a third straight day. A tropical storm warning has been issued for parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Forecasters at the National Hurricane Center say heavy rainfall and flooding will likely be the most significant hazard. John Mowell with the Lafayette Parish Sheriff's Office Search and Rescue says they have special equipment to help them find missing people on land.
The packs contain items like maps, GPSs, things that a technician, a rescue technician, will need in order to sustain themselves for 24 to 48 hours.
Bowell also says they have a boat prepped with a diver support and a victim lift device. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg QuickTake, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 5:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Amy. The Milwaukee Bucks are, of course, led by Giannis Antetokounmpo, two-time NBA MVP. They also have another all-star in Chris Middleton. The pair combined to score 68 points when the Bucks beat the Nets in Game 3 in Milwaukee. And last night, Game 6, 68 more. Middleton had 38. They also combined for 27 rebounds. The Bucks won 104-89. Kevin Durant led the Nets with 32.
Down early, we got ourselves back into the game. We were down like 12-15, and then we got back, cut it. It was 82-77, then we found a three-point shooter, and that's when they kind of took control. So I felt like we were right there. We just couldn't get over the hump.
The home teams won every game of the series, and Game 7 is tomorrow night in Brooklyn. At the Coliseum, the Islanders got a goal from Cal Clutterbuck. 3 minutes left, second period. That tied the game, but with 20 seconds left in the second, Braden Point with his 11th goal of the playoffs in Tampa Bay won 2-1, leads the series 2-1, game four tomorrow. At Citi Field, Mets had only two hits. Cubs only had four, but one of them, a Javi Baez two-run homer in the first inning off Marcus Stroman. The Cubs won 2-0 to avoid getting swept in the four-game series. A three-game sweep for the Yankees in Buffalo over the Blue Jays. Yanks got off to a good start. A triple play in the first inning, already the second one they have pulled off this season. They had a lead, fell behind, went back ahead on a Giancarlo Stanton two-run homer seventh inning. The Yanks won 8-4. Fog in San Diego prevented the U.S. Open first round from completing. South African Louis Oosthuizen has two holes left. He's four under par, shares the lead with American Russell Henley, two-time Open champ Brooks Koepka only two shots behind. Defending champ Bryson DeChambeau trails by six, and recent PGA winner Phil Mickelson trails by eight. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Amy?
Thank you, John. Join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We'll speak with the man in charge of NBC's Olympics coverage. Tune in for a conversation with NBC Sports Chairman Pete Bobacqua tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 on Bloomberg Radio, or download the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. This is Bloomberg. Sunshine this morning, cloudy this afternoon. We're going up to 85 degrees. Showers late tonight, down to 65. Sunny tomorrow with a chance of showers later, going up to 90. It's 63 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Good Friday morning. I'm Nathan Hager. U.S. futures are adrift as investors unwind some of this year's dominant reflation trades. Treasuries are advancing. Commodities are extending a slump. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up a point and a half. Dow futures up 19 points. NASDAQ futures up 31. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. The CAC in Paris is higher by 0.2%. And the FTSE 100 in London is down 0.5%. The Nikkei 225 in Japan closed 0.2% lower. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was higher by 0.9%. The 10-year Treasury is up right now 5/32. The yield 1.48% on the benchmark 10-year note. Yield on the 2-year 0.20%. NYMEX crude is down 0.2%, down 15 cents at $70.89 a barrel. Brent is down 0.4% at $72.82. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The EU has lifted travel restrictions for U.S. residents. EU finance ministers have approved it, and it includes the U.S. in a white list of countries from which non-essential travel is allowed. New rules will be in effect in a matter of days. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says he's ready for both dialogue and confrontation with the U.S. South Korean analysts say this is a good sign with Kim as he's leaving doors open for talks with President Biden. In the NBA, the Nets lost to the Bucks 104-89. Brooklyn heads into a deciding Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals this weekend. In the NHL, the Islanders lost to the Lightning in their Stanley Cup semifinal series. Tampa Bay now leads that series 2-1. Major League Baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost along with the Orioles. The Giants won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. This has also been a pretty significant week for the Biden administration. Talks with Russia's Vladimir Putin, possible future talks with China's Xi Jinping, and where the infrastructure deal may be standing right now. We're joined by Greg Valliere, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist at AGF Investments. Greg, it's always a pleasure. We have a lot to get to. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. Now that President Biden has met with Russia to establish what he calls the rules of the road, he's turning his attention to Xi Jinping in Beijing. What could be on that agenda?
Well, good morning. Nice to talk to you. I do think that a phone call with Xi is fairly imminent. There's a lot of differences, and I think that they won't resolve many of them. But at the same time, I think both with the Putin meeting and now with something with Xi, the temperature is being lowered, and I think that's a good thing.
President Biden had said that China is a really big priority because of the ties into the U.S. economy, which makes it a little bit different from his Russia priority. So how does that complicate talks, though, that economic tie?
Well, it could improve chances because we have so many goods that we do exchange. Many people think we're in the middle of a trade war, but China buys a ton of our soybeans. There's a lot of agricultural trade and other products as well. But there are big differences, how China treats its dissidents, China's lack of transparency on COVID, and maybe most egregiously, their hacking of U.S. firms, including firms that are working on a vaccine. So I do think there's a long laundry list of issues that have to be discussed.
Let's shift gears for just a moment and go back to the NATO summit. What's interesting is that we're learning that President Biden met on the sidelines at that summit with Turkey's President Erdogan to talk about the weapon system that Turkey purchased from Russia. Couldn't seem to come to any agreements there. But what does that tell you that they are meeting and talking?
Well, it tells me that there's a view in this new administration that the dialogue is important. And discretion is important. I think after the last 4 years of Donald Trump, a lot of these relationships were not built on substance. I think now there's a lot more substance.
President Biden meeting with Putin, Erdogan looking to meet with Xi Jinping, and now we're hearing North Korea's Kim Jong-un pushing for talks or some sort of dialogue. Greg, are you sensing a trend here? What is the strategy that you're seeing with these particular world leaders?
Well, we're talking, even with North Korea, and at the same time, you know, we can talk, but there's still no resolution. I mean, we still have an issue with Russia and cyber warfare, Russia and their own hacking, Russia and Ukraine, things like that. So while dialogue is good, at some point you have to get results, and we're not there yet.
I mentioned North Korea's Kim Jong-un looking for talks. He said both dialogue and confrontation with the U.S. Would President Biden meet with him or should he? Remember, President Trump was criticized for doing so.
Yeah, I think that is probably a ways off. I think that the Biden team would be worried that a meeting would be seen as a caving in, as doing a favor to North Korea when they don't deserve one.
And closer to home on Capitol Hill, work continues on an infrastructure deal. Prospects for a deal may be improving now, even though they're still trillions of dollars apart. Where do you see that standing and going from here?
A slight improvement on two fronts, Amy. Number one, there's more than just 10 members of Congress, five in each party, who are willing to consider a compromise. There's another 10 or 12 that are indicating they could be inclined to support a deal. That's a good story. Secondly, I think that there may be a change of opinion by Joe Manchin, the moderate from West Virginia, the Democrat who wants bipartisanship and could delay everything. He got smacked pretty good yesterday by Mitch McConnell, who does not want to negotiate. This may make Joe Manchin think, you know, enough is enough. I'm going to have to be part of the deal. That also is a good story for something by the end of the summer. I don't think it's imminent, but maybe before the August break, we could get an infrastructure deal.
In 30 seconds, can you tell me what it tells you that this deal has not died by now, that the deal is still alive?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, there still is a desire for something. Even the Republicans want bridges, highways, dams, water, things like that. The big hang-up, I think, is going to be how do you pay for it, or do you pay for it? And if it's paid for by any kind of taxes, that's a non-starter for the Republicans. So still a ways to go on the details, but a deal is not dead.
All right. A lot going on in the nation's capital with the infrastructure deal and with all of these meetings with President Biden. Greg Valliere, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist at AGF Investments. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. S&P futures up a fraction. Dow futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 28 and a quarter. Much more still to come on this Friday morning on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak continues here on Bloomberg Radio. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit them anytime at mynycb.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good Friday morning. I'm Amy Morris.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. For the first time in nearly four decades, we have a new federal holiday. The move to observe Juneteenth, commemorating the end of slavery, was signed into law late yesterday by President Biden.
I've only been president for several months, but I think this will go down for me. It's one of the greatest honors I will have had as president, not because I did it, you did it, Democrats and Republicans.
June 19th comes tomorrow, Saturday. That left firms and agencies across the country scrambling to decide whether to give workers the day off today.
Now, financial markets will be open. The news came too late to make any changes on that front. Most government workers will get the day off. So will the SEC and the Federal Reserve. Banks are not giving staff the day off, though some are offering a floating holiday to take later this year.
Meantime, on Capitol Hill, prospects for a bipartisan infrastructure deal appear to be improving once again. 21 senators, including 11 Republicans, have now signed on to the framework for a $580 billion package, though it's still unclear if the measure has enough support among Democrats.
With his European trip now in the books, President Biden is turning his focus to Beijing. The White House says it's laying plans for more extensive talks with China. Bloomberg's John Liu has details from Beijing.
So what we know is that after President Biden met with Russian President Vladimir Putin, his national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, said that they were beginning to have talks about a potential meeting between President Biden and President Xi. One potential location might be at the G20 at the end of October in Rome. That might make sense. This would, of course, be the first meeting between the two presidents face to face. They've had a phone call earlier this year, but no other contact since then.
Bloomberg's John Liu says the White House won't confirm whether a formal meeting between Presidents Biden and Xi Jinping is in the works. President Biden spent most of his European trip pushing leaders to take a tougher stance on China.
All right, turning to markets now. This is the final trading day of the week. It is also quadruple witching day, the time when a pile of equities, futures, and options contracts expire. The process tends to result in some volatility for stocks near the end of the day as traders buy and sell to square up their positions. And heading into today's session, S&P futures are little changed. Dow futures are up 12 points. NASDAQ futures up 25. And the 10-year Treasury is up 5/32, yield 1.48%. NYMEX crude is down 0.3% at $70.80 a barrel. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. 5:33 now on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. New York City's subway system reached a record 2.5 million customers on Wednesday. The MTA says that's about 44% of pre-pandemic era ridership and the highest level since the COVID-19 outbreak. While the 2.5 million customers is below the pre-pandemic weekday average of 5.5 million, subway ridership has been been increasing as New York City fully reopens. More businesses are asking employees to work from their offices, and cultural and entertainment venues are loosening restrictions. Reaction continues to come in after the Affordable Care Act fended off a third major challenge in the Supreme Court. In a 7-2 ruling, the court decided the plaintiffs, including some Republican-controlled states, lacked the standing to challenge the law in court because there was no injury. Celebrating the ruling, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The ACA is here to stay. And now we're going to try to make it bigger and better. Establish once and for all affordable health care as a basic right of every American citizen.
Senator Chuck Schumer. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he's ready for both dialogue and confrontation, offering an opening for talks with the United States. It comes days after the U.S. and others urged the North to abandon its nuclear program and return to talks. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden's nuclear envoy heads to the region to build support for a strategy toward Pyongyang. Louisiana is under a state of emergency ahead of an approaching tropical system just weeks into the hurricane season. This woman in Lake Charles is still recovering from last year's storms, but she says, unlike many of her neighbors, she is not leaving.
I have homeowners insurance, but my homeowners told me that they can't help me. So we just need help in here because everybody on these streets, they're leaving us. We've been longtime residents, and it's like a ghost town around here.
Tropical storm warnings have also been issued for parts of Mississippi and Alabama. Iran has begun voting in a presidential election tipped in the favor of a hardline protege of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Public apathy has been widespread after a panel under Khamenei barred hundreds of candidates, including reformists and those aligned with outgoing President Hassan Rouhani. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy, this figured to be a long series between the Nets and Bucks, and sure enough, Game 7 tomorrow night in Brooklyn. Milwaukee stayed alive. Bucks took the lead right away and went on to win 104-89. Chris Middleton scored 38 points. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 30. Kevin Durant led the Nets with 32. The Nets coach is Steve Nash.
We were in a situation tonight. Guys were, you know, I think a little fatigued. We didn't have our best stuff, and we just... You know, we're facing maybe a few too many things that were going against us, in the big picture.
Like injuries, James Harden obviously still slowed by the hamstring injury, though he did score 16 points. And again, no Kyrie Irving, not known if he's got a chance to play Game 7. Two Game 6s tonight, Atlanta leading 3-2 and hosting Philadelphia. The Clippers up 3-2 and home for Utah. Rick Carlisle resigned after 13 years as the coach in Dallas. There are six NBA teams looking for a new coach. Coliseum, Tampa Bay topped the Islanders 2-1. Lightning now up 2-1 in the series, so the Isles really need Game 4 tomorrow. In Buffalo, another triple play for the Yankees. Their second of the season happened in the first inning. They were helped by some poor base running by the Blue Jays. Yanks won 8-4 to finish a sweep. Two-run homers for Gio Urshela and Giancarlo Stanton. Mets were going for a four-game sweep with the Cubs, but lost 2-0. Mets had only two hits. The good news is Jacob DeGrom had a clean MRI of the shoulder that forced him out on Wednesday. Baltimore and Arizona both lost, both 10-3. The Orioles have now lost 19 consecutive road games. The Diamondbacks have set a new Major League record with 23 straight road losses. Russell Henley shot 4-under, leads the U.S. Open in San Diego. Louis Oosthuizen also 4-under. He's got two holes left in his first round. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Amy?
All right, thank you, John. It is 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. For that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
New York's about to become one of the first states to impose tougher rules on pharmacy benefit managers. The move comes after the Supreme Court last year swept away a longstanding federal legal barrier to the restrictions. States including Texas and Tennessee have also set tougher rules for PBMs. Newsweek is out with its list of the 100 community colleges that give you the most bang for your buck. Coming in at number one, St. Paul's School of Nursing, Queens. Tuition's higher than at many comparable colleges, but median earnings 6 years after completion are more than $81,000. The Connecticut State Senate Thursday passed a bill that allows for the cultivation and sale of marijuana in the state. It would allow adults 21 or older to buy and possess pot starting July 1st. Retail sales of recreational cannabis in Connecticut would not start until May 2022 at the earliest. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
All right. Thank you, Ed. It is 538 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm talking about Boeing and its 737 MAX 10, with the largest version of the jetliner set to take its first flight as soon as today.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about Wall Street being open today, despite the Juneteenth federal holiday.
I'm Caroline Hepcon, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We are reporting on a jump in COVID cases, a fresh challenge for the government as the Tories lose their first seat in a by-election.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford now expects stronger second quarter results.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching, earnings from Adobe. The company delivered a forecast that topped estimates. Let's get more on that from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
More customers were signing up for subscriptions to its digital marketing and customer analysis software. The San Jose-based company said sales will be about $3.88 billion in the period ending in August. Analysts on average estimated $3.83 billion. The company has been pitching new creative software tools to continue Adobe's steady 20% revenue growth. The company last year introduced a version of its popular app, Illustrator, for Apple's iPad to offer its software on more devices. Devices being used by professionals and hobbyists. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Charlie. Another corporate story we're following this morning. Microsoft planning a massive expansion into China. Sources tell us it's looking to add 4 new data centers in the country by early next year. They already have 6 data centers in China. S&P futures higher by almost 2 points. Dow futures up 24. NASDAQ futures up 30. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. Sunshine this morning, cloudy this afternoon. We'll see 85 degrees, back down to 65 with some showers late tonight, and then sunshine returns tomorrow, going up to 90. Right now it's 63 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are holding steady at the moment. Popular trades linked to hotter inflation are in retreat after the Federal Reserve signaled it was preparing for earlier interest rate increases, helping rein in speculation that price pressures could get out of hand. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 1 point. Dow futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 30 points. 10-year Treasury up for 30 seconds. The yield at 1.48%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.20%. NYMEX crude down 0.5%, down 32 cents at $70.72 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1%, up $18.10 at $17.92.90 an ounce. The euro right now at 1.1914 against the dollar, and the yen is at 110.21. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. Americans can pack their luggage for Europe. The European Union lifted travel restrictions for U.S. residents in the latest step toward a return to normalcy. Diplomats say the U.N. General Assembly is expected to approve a resolution today calling on Myanmar's military junta to restore the country's democratic transition and calling on all countries to prevent the flow of arms into Myanmar. The resolution also calls for the immediate release of Myanmar's ousted leaders. In the NBA, the Nets lost to the Bucks, forcing a deciding Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals this weekend. In the NHL, the Islanders lost to the Lightning 2-1 in their Stanley Cup semifinal series. Tampa Bay now lead that series 2-1. Major League Baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, along with the Orioles, the Giants won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 549 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. As we've been telling you, Juneteenth is a new federal holiday. It was signed into law yesterday by President Biden to commemorate the end of slavery in the U.S. And this last-minute move had Wall Street banks and financial exchanges grappling with how to observe it. We are joined now by Bloomberg Markets reporter Danny Berger. Danny, thanks for taking the time with us this morning. You know, state and federal workers found out yesterday, some of them as late as 5 p.m., close of business, that they were going to have a paid holiday today to observe Juneteenth. But that is not the case for financial markets. What do exchanges have to do before they can decide to close?
Well, there is a lot of input that they need to get before exchanges can just close, because there are a lot of stakeholders here. I mean, you have banks, you have broker-dealers, you have regulators. So they're going to go to them first, get their input before they decide to close. So obviously, that's not something that they necessarily would do overnight. You know, we know that the Fed Reserve Board may be offices may be closing, but the market functions are continuing. The SEC offices are going to be closed. But again, whether or not it becomes a market holiday, it's more down to the industry, and they're called the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, which helped guide a lot of the decisions from the exchanges themselves. They said, look, we're currently going to recommend that markets stay open. It does fall on a Saturday this year, and it will next year as well, which adds to some of the complications here. But then going forward, it will be part of their annual calendar review. So again, they're basically just saying there's no coordination yet. We're taking things, we're getting feedback, and from there we will decide. So this year, markets, as we know, today are still open.
So let's get into this a little bit. How complicated is it to integrate a federal holiday into the market's calendar? This is the first federal holiday that's come about in 40 years.
Yeah, well, look, I think if we're talking about exchanges closing in general, they've done it before on short notice. They've had a large degree of coordination when they do this. For example, they've done it when former presidents have died. But when it comes to integrating a national holiday and doing it year over year, having it be a calendar event, historically, U.S. markets have been pretty slow. For example, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, when it became a federal holiday, it took about 15 years for the exchanges to close to observe that. You'd hope that we've made some advances. That was in 1983, you know, be it electronic trading or just some of the ease to sort of adjust. So you'd hope they could have a quicker reaction this time around. But again, typically this is something that does take a period of adjusting.
Now, Danny, here's a little twist. This holiday falls between Memorial Day and Independence Day each year. Mm-hmm. Why might the industry be reluctant to add another holiday in that time frame?
Well, you know, if you take a very cynical view, when markets are closed, that's a period where exchanges are losing out on revenue. They still have the fixed costs of just having the exchanges exist, but they're not making that profit in. And so because Juneteenth is now sandwiched in between two holidays, from a very purely profit-driven perspective, it's kind of difficult. It's a difficult proposition. However, you know, you'd have to hope and assume that companies aren't necessarily so callous. And there is a lot of social pressure as well, just because this is a very monumental holiday that has been declared, that, you know, the profit motivation may not win out against that social one.
So what are companies like J.P. Morgan and UBS doing? How are they planning to acknowledge this new holiday?
Well, we've already seen some of the banks prior to this being a federal holiday telling their employees that they could have more or less like a floating holiday. That's what JP Morgan and UBS have told their employees after that this was declared, saying, okay, you can have a paid holiday. It'll be floating to mark the occasion, so you can take it off when you want. Other banks like Morgan Stanley said you can step away from work midday, take time for any activities that are meaningful to you. But it just really shows that it's hard to say, okay, everyone can step away, especially for the financial industry when exchanges are still happening. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have these banks allow their employees to completely take the day off. It needs to be some degree of coordination.
All right. Thank you, Danny. We're going to leave it there. Bloomberg Markets reporter Danny Berger. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for a Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
More than 24 federal courts will be closed today in observance of the Juneteenth National Independence Day, the new federal holiday signed into law just yesterday by President Biden. A judge in San Francisco ruled that Uber can challenge a lawsuit over the classification of California drivers by arguing that the recently enacted Proposition 22 is retroactive. A measure raising Delaware's minimum wage to $15 an hour has received final approval in the state legislature. It is awaiting the governor's signature.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story we're watching. The Supreme Court once again deciding to uphold Obamacare. The case was argued last November. The decision was one of the most highly anticipated this term. In a 7-2 ruling, the court preserved the landmark law that provides health insurance to 20 million Americans. For more on the move, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Neil Kinkoff, a professor of constitutional law at Georgia State University College of Law.
Why a 7-month wait to hand down this decision, which is 7-2 and just 16 pages long?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer. Maybe someday the conference notes will tell us what was really going on. Because you're right, it's a 7-2 decision, and it's on a technicality, really, on standing. And so why did it take so long? And you can only imagine the justices were actually going back and forth about the merits and then decided at the last, maybe not at the last minute, but at some point along the way, decided to instead resolve it on this jurisdictional ground.
Yeah, so tell us why the court decided as it did.
So it ruled that the parties who brought the case didn't have the authority, the jurisdiction, to bring the case. So in order to bring a case, you have to be an actually injured party. So it can't be the case that you just think Obamacare is unconstitutional or you think the government is doing something that violates the law. That doesn't allow you to bring a lawsuit. You have to be actually personally harmed by the government's action. And then if you are, you can say, I'm harmed and the government is acting unconstitutionally. Court, please order a remedy. And so what the court said in this case is that the plaintiffs, there were two individuals and a set of 12 states, saying you haven't been directly harmed by anything the federal government has done.
And explain the substance of the case.
What they were complaining about is that Congress in 2017 amended Obamacare to remove the provision imposing a penalty on anyone who didn't buy the required insurance. And so what you had was this odd situation of two individuals who were complaining that there's a requirement that they buy insurance, but there's no actual penalty or anything that happens to them if they don't go ahead and do it. So the court said, you're not actually harmed. And then the states made an even odder argument, saying that their costs of running their state would go up because they have to run these insurance programs. The problem is, once you eliminate the penalty for not signing up for it, it's hard to see how the state is being harmed. In fact, you would think removing the penalty helps them, because now people who don't want it aren't going to sign up for it to avoid a penalty. So the Supreme Court said, as to both of these parties, you're not personally injured. You're like anybody else who's just out there complaining that they don't like Obamacare.
And that's Georgia State University law professor Neil Kinkoff speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. S&P futures little changed right now. Dow futures up 8. NASDAQ futures up 29 points. 10-year Treasury up 4/32. The yield 1.48%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.20%. This is Bloomberg.